This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Guide to Everything, a podcast about everything. I am one of your hosts, Tom.
And I'm Tim.
Tim, how are you doing this week?
Tom, I'm feeling a little stressed. How are you?
Also stressed. However, not necessarily for the reasons you might think, Tim. I'm stressed because I got my first parking ticket that I've had in over 2.5 years since I bought the car that I have.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tom, two things.
Uh-huh.
Number one, I think it's been more than 2.5 years since you got your car.
Maybe 3.5 years.
I think you've had that car for almost a decade.
No, it's definitely not been that long. But I am incredibly hazy about how long I have had this car.
Yeah. It's at least 3 or 4 years. Number two, this comes as a shock to me that you're not constantly getting parking tickets because you hate doing things that are annoying.
I do hate.
And like often you just like don't do things if you don't feel like doing them.
Well, if I really hated things that were annoying, how would I continue doing this show?
Tom, it seems like you don't hate doing this and you're charmed by me.
I didn't say hate. I said annoying. No, because I that was one of the promises I made to myself when I got this car, because like I use this car very infrequently.
Yeah, I think it's disgusting that you have a car in New York City, Tom. We have a robust public transit system.
Who cares? Yeah, and it's full of disease right now.
So it's your car.
No, my car, actually, my
car.
You
know where the disease in your car came from.
My car is actually fairly filthy right now, but it's usually actually, you haven't been in my car that many times. You're frequently not invited. But my car is actually usually pretty clean.
Yeah, you're always like, once in a while, you're like, you want to go park in my car? And I know what that means, Tom. Boys like you, you're all the same.
Look, my car is actually usually surprisingly clean. Usually it's the cleanest thing I own. And mostly just because I don't use it very much. But one of the promises I made myself, knowing that I wouldn't use this car that much, was, all right, if I get this car and I'm going to pay the payments on it, I'm going to pay the insurance on it, I cannot get tickets constantly, because last time I had a car in the city, which I did need for commuting purposes, I did get tickets constantly. And no, but this was a multi-year stretch, and it wasn't that I forgot, it was that I thought I was parked on the other side of the street than I was today.
Tom,
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. And I think it should be noted that in New York City, you can't just park a car on the street and then just leave it there till when you
indefinitely,
need it.
Yeah.
Next, we have the single alternate side of the street parking, alternate side, where every couple days, they come and sweep the streets, which I don't think they actually sweep the streets.
They do sweep the streets, but it's questionable if it's necessary as often as they do it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, if they didn't sweep the streets, eventually, like, nature would start to retake the city. But that happens, you know, if you swept the street on Tuesday, nature's not going to have made much progress by Friday. It would be fine.
Yeah. I do think it's ridiculous that there is free parking on the streets in New York City. So I think I have a car, too.
Uh-huh.
Great. You caught me, Tom. Great. You exposed me.
Hypocrite.
But I think it should suck to have a car in New York. Like, it sucks. It sucks all right now. But
yeah.
That's because, like, everybody's home all the time and you can move the car or whatever.
Right.
But, like, I think it should suck a lot to have a car.
I mean, it does suck a lot. I think it's fine. I'm fine with...
In normal times, I'm talking about. Like, where...
Yeah.
You know, when it might be convenient, like a little less convenient to take the subway, and you just get in the car. Like, we should be discouraging that.
I think a lot of people don't do that.
You do.
I don't do that.
You drive everywhere.
I don't drive everywhere. I just told you
don't
that
go
I,
anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. I told you that I don't use my car. I use my car to go to Best Buy. And that's about it.
Now, that I take offense to, Tom.
Mm-hmm. Why?
You live closer to Best Buy.
Right.
We have the same Best Buy.
That's how close we live to each other.
I moved to a new neighborhood. I used to have my own Best Buy that was so close to me, Tom, that like you wouldn't dream of driving there. But I think you live closer to that Best Buy,
yeah.
And I still only walk to that Best Buy when I need to go to that absolute hellhole.
Yeah, but here's the problem, Tim. What happens when you buy something that you're very excited about to buy at Best Buy, and then you got to walk all the way home, and it's going to take, you know, 15, 20 minutes? And you're too excited to do that, and then but it's also too far to run all the way home.
You know what sucks about modern life and these times and normal times and, mm-hmm. and every this is actually an issue because like on last time I was at Best Buy, I was buying a speaker for my home. It wasn't like an extravagant
I think this is maybe
purchase.
The fifth time we've talked about this Best Buy trip on the
yeah,
podcast.
Okay.
but it makes like, sense because I think this is like certainly one of the biggest things I've done in the last 6 months.
It's the only place I go because like I'll buy something like this will be my plan for a Saturday. Like
yeah.
My wife will be like, "Hey, what are you gonna do?" I was like, "You know what? I'm gonna order a speaker online for in-store pickup."
Yeah,
and
go pick it up.
Best Buy will email me when it's ready, and I'll take a 15-minute walk there, grab the speaker, and walk home. And I'll only have to be in that hellhole of a store for 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And you're
setting up that 7.1 surround sound system. So far, this is taking you 2 months to go and pick up each speaker individually.
No, I've only bought one speaker this year.
Okay.
I'm a big fan
of mono recordings, Tim.
Yeah. Exactly.
I don't understand why you need all that fanciness with stereo sound.
I think it's a gimmick, Tom, and it's not going to last.
Is that why we released this podcast in mono, Tim? Because of your affinity towards mono sound?
I thought we were always releasing it with you in one ear and me in the other ear.
No, I feel like we did that like a long time ago, and it was
like
just...
2008, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was like, let's... that way people will be oriented.
Right, and people talking. Did not like it.
Yeah, yeah. So I was walking home with this big bag from an electronics store, and it's mm-hmm. freaking, it was 2020, and these are dark times.
Yeah.
And I walked by literally, I think, three different, like...
Mugging
food
stations?
Pantry. No, oh. the food pantry
uh-huh.
lines.
Right.
That were like, this was at the height of the pandemic, and just like hundreds of people just wait, and like me.
And you were biggest, saying, well, look, times are tough for me too. I only have a mono stereo system.
Yeah, it's it really made me feel like a real piece of shit, and I don't think I've like bought anything since then. Just like, I don't walk by, people can't, it really made me feel bad.
Well,
and
good.
It made me feel bad about like, our country,
mm-hmm.
Capitalism, life in general.
Yeah.
Why we do this to each other? Why we live like this?
Mm-hmm.
You're
talking about in-store pickup right now.
Yeah.
Why
I mean,
why do we live like this?
Yeah.
Why don't they have
a virus?
Why don't they have 1 hour delivery? Why do I have to go to the store and pick it up?
Why don't they have drones do it?
Because
the government won't let them.
I recently screwed up and this is just the other day, paid my rent from the wrong checking account online.
Ooh, look at Mr. Fancy, multiple checking accounts.
Well, by
and I'm a bad guy for buying a speaker. I see.
Well, by paying for my rent with the wrong checking account, I overdrew that account by a lot of money, and then I had to go to the bank.
Oh, my rent is a lot of money.
Yeah, it is a lot of money. It's more money than I have in a checking account I don't use. So I had to go to one bank, take out $1,000 in cash and walk to the other bank. And it was one of those ATMs where I'm like, oh, this is the ATM that can do different denominations. But it didn't. It just spit out $20 bills. And it was just like a gigantic wad of $1,000 cash. And then I had to nervously walk down the street to put it in another machine. It's like, well, who's in charge here, me or the machines?
Sad state of affairs, Tom.
It felt like I was working.
We get our money from machines.
Yeah,
sometimes I feel like I'm the machine. Yeah. We're just a cog.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was my troubles for this week, Tim. And also, I was thinking about how this ticket, you know, they put it under the windshield wiper. I don't think I told you this, Tim. But I was disloyal. Well, not disloyal. It was before they came around, our wiper blade sponsor, Trico, who is not a current sponsor. Let me say that for the record.
But we remain fans.
We remain Trico loyalists. However, before they came along as a sponsor, I had bought two new wiper blades. Tim, wouldn't you know it? A couple of weeks ago, I was on the highway doing 80 miles an hour, and one of these wiper blades flew off my car.
Did you put it on yourself? Did you install that wiper blade yourself? So you.
But I had installed this wiper blade like a year ago, and it was fine. And it came off because I was driving so fast, and because it was torrential rain. Damn near killed myself because all of a sudden I didn't have a wiper blade. I'm flying down the highway. And then I was thinking today, well, I shouldn't have even gone to the store and bought a brand new wiper blade because then they wouldn't have had a place to put this ticket.
Oh, yeah. It's a loophole. How about whenever you park your car, you remove your wiper blades?
How about whenever I move my car, remove my license plate so they can't tell whose car it is?
Yeah, I don't think that'll work well for you, Tom.
And I'll put a fake, not even fake, a real boot on my wheel, but I have the key of the boot, so then they can't tow it.
Hmm. Do you know people that do? Have you ever done that or been with somebody who has taken a ticket off another car and put it on their car?
Yeah, but at least in New York City, that shit doesn't work. They look at it to make sure.
Yeah, and they have, like, I think they just walk down the street and scan every car, because, yeah. Like, right?
What do you mean?
Because if they've issued a ticket...
Are you
like,
thinking of RoboCop?
There's something on the registry. Yeah, I'm thinking of RoboCop, sorry. Tom, mm-hmm. This week we're talking about a television program... A very popular television program here in the United States called Jeopardy. It's a quiz show, Tom. Get used to it.
Well, I am used to it, Tim. It's been around as long as I've been alive. And it exists around the world. But I don't think it's anywhere near as popular anywhere else in the world as it is in... I mean, maybe it's also very popular in Canada, but nowhere near... You know, the Turkish version of Jeopardy, I don't think is as popular in Turkey as the U.S. version is in the U.S.
And why do you think that is?
Just because I think it's like it's a cultural phenomenon in the U.S. Like it's not just another quiz show. It is an institution. You know, the same way, like, I'm sure, you know, the Turkish version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire is as popular as the U.S. version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, maybe even more popular. But I can't imagine an exported show being as popular as Jeopardy is in the U.S.
Yeah. I also, I think it really hits that sweet spot. Like, it was never, it's never been a cool show here.
Right.
And we're talking about the version that launched in 1984.
Not the Art Linklater version or whatever?
Art Linklater can go suck an egg.
Wow. Well, he's long dead, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he's sucking eggs in heaven now.
Well, that's sweet of you to say.
He's looking down at us from his cloud while sucking on an egg.
Yeah, and sucking guess what?
The yolk right out of that thing.
It's a Cadbury egg. He's very happy.
Oh, man. He is in hog heaven, which is not as good as person heaven, but...
but still not bad.
Pretty good.
Man, if I should start carrying around Cadbury eggs with me all the time so that if somebody ever tells me to go suck an egg, I could say, yeah, gladly, and then whip that out. And then that'll everybody else up. Will go, oh.
And you'd be like, and that, my friends, is called an epic clapback.
Yeah. But I'll have a mouthful of... fondant in my mouth. That's how you call it. And they'll dribble on my shirt.
Yeah. Yeah. It was never cool, right?
Yeah.
It was never like in as much as a game show could be cool. It wasn't like a phenomenon like
I don't think
late 90s Who Wants to Be a Millionaire or like
right where it got like tremendous ratings or Survivor or something like that.
Yeah, or Deal or No Deal. When was Deal or No Deal in, like...
The Harry Mandel version?
Yeah.
You're talking about? That was post Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. That was maybe early 2000s.
Yeah, but...
It wasn't that
long ago.
With Meghan Markle, the princess, or whatever, not a princess, something. Dame? Lady?
Huh?
What is her title?
Meghan Markle?
Yeah.
Didn't she renounce her title?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I guess, but it sounds like they kind of didn't. I don't care that much to really know, but she was a smart move.
They were like, we're going to move to Los Angeles. We're going to renounce our like
we're gonna chase
responsibilities.
Our Hollywood dreams. Yeah.
Yeah. We won't have any responsibilities, but we're going to keep like most of that money.
Right. And also like when we do go back to England, everybody's still got to bow and curtsy to us.
Yeah.
And we can still wear silly clothes if we want. And everybody has to not make fun of us.
Deal or No Deal
mm-hmm.
was like not that long ago that it was like a popular show, right?
I feel like it was a decent amount of time ago.
I think anything post 9/11 is like, recent.
Right.
Right.
Well, you constantly refer to things as, well, I guess this is what it's like in a post 9/11 world. And a lot of times it's for things that have no bearing. It'll be like, that's how much movie tickets are. Well, I guess that's what life is like in a post 9/11 world.
Where's the lie, Tom? It was on NBC from 2005 to 2009.
Okay.
It's just wild to me. Have you ever... seen an episode of that?
Just
like the whole thing, they have these ladies mm-hmm. holding all these briefcases.
Beautiful.
And they're always just
too.
Like, yeah, and they're just like catcalling the ladies the whole time. They're like, briefcase number 19. Ooh, va 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 voom. Look at this babe. Hey, open up that briefcase, toots.
Yeah.
Goes and pinches her butt.
They don't go and pinch their butt, Tim. They just pay
some. They did one time, but they had to edit it out.
They pay them nice compliments.
I just think it's that seems like that I could see what's his face Family Feud from the 70s. Richard Dawson pulling that crap,
right?
But Howie Mandel, come on, have some class.
Well, Richard Dawson, he would just go up and kiss the ladies. Howie Mandel is a germaphobe. so he couldn't kiss the lady. So he just had to resort to catcalling.
But I feel like that.
And everybody
that
expects
show...
that of Howie Mandel. He's a man's man.
Yeah. The creator of Bobby's World himself.
And also the creator of putting a latex glove over your head and blowing it up.
That's the only thing people our age know about Howie Mandel.
Yeah, I think he's like one of those like judges on something, The Voice or America's Got Talent or...
Yeah, I think so.
The X Factor.
Yeah, I just watch how bizarre... Go, I'll lend you my Deal or No Deal DVDs.
Okay.
And just...
Do they come in a Deal or No Deal replica suitcase? Because that'd be pretty neat.
Yeah, no, they don't. Why would they do that? That'd be so expensive.
I don't. Look, Tim, money's no object when it comes to Deal or No Deal. Think about how much they could cater.
Tell that to the banker.
Think about how much they could cater to the winners of Deal or No Deal by putting out an extremely lavish, expensive box set that, of course, they're going to buy because their episode's in there.
Yeah, but what if somebody only left with $1? They can't even afford that lavish set.
Then, you know what, Tim? They can't afford just a regular box set either. They couldn't afford a single season.
They couldn't afford a single bean to feed them and their families on Christmas
night.
You could
buy a bean. It'd be crazy if, like, at stores, they sold individual episodes of television shows, like, on disc.
I mean, they used to. I remember my brother was a big fan of Cheers when he was, like, 9 years old or something. And in, like, In 1990, you could go in for, like, $25 buy a tape of two episodes of Cheers.
Yeah. Yeah, because what else would you do? Wait until four episodes are on that night?
I mean, these were primo episodes. These were choice episodes.
Yeah.
But, like, this is wild.
But even that, it would be, like, primo episodes. I'm saying, no, have every episode available. And you have to thumb through 200, you know, individual DVDs at Best Buy to find...
Well, why would anybody do that, Tom?
I don't know. If technology went differently.
Thank God it didn't.
It's just something to think about.
Because I like streaming and binging, my friend.
Yeah. Me, I don't like binging, but I do like streaming. Anyway, Tim, Jeopardy.
Jeopardy. But it was, like, trashy enough, right? It's always been
Jeopardy?
Like...
Jeopardy?
Here's the thing. Uh-huh. It's highbrow... In as much as a syndicated game show paired with Wheel of Fortune can be highbrow, right?
Yeah, because it's
there's
high...
a ceiling and it hits that ceiling.
Yeah, it's highbrow, but it's still trivia.
Yeah, and I would like it a lot better if they got rid of all the categories about, you know, classic literature,
right?
Geography, like bodies of water that I'm never going to learn.
What about before and after?
Before and after, I love.
Yeah,
before
well, that's
after,
one of the most popular categories.
Anyway, Jeopardy, I think, is maybe my favorite TV show.
It's certainly one of the most consistent TV shows out there. Have you ever watched an episode of Jeopardy and when it was over, go, ooh, that was a real clunker of an episode?
No.
Yeah.
And even Alex Trebek, God rest his soul, I feel like he would. He was always rooting for somebody to make a lot of money. And like for like his ideal game would be that like every contestant got the same amount of questions right, and every question was gotten right, and then somebody bet it all in Final Jeopardy and left with like $100,000. Because when people win only like $12,000, he's just like, "Well, good showing, Deborah. I mean, not really, but hopefully you'll
not
win more
really.
Tomorrow.
I got paid more during this episode than you did, but
you know what?" Regis took that. Wow, we lost Regis and we lost Alex Trebek in the same year.
Yeah. Tough year for game
shows. And Art
shows.
Linklater as well.
No, Art Linklater, I'm pretty sure, died decades ago.
Reed just pulled that one time, where he bragged, somebody was agonizing on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire over the answer to the question, and was just Regis, I'm not gonna Regis is you gotta make a decision, and the contestant was like, don't pressure me, this is a lot of money, you don't have a say in that. And he was just
did he curse at him? Did he push him?
Regis said listen, pal, I'm making more money for being here tonight than you can possibly make here, or something. And it was something that was that was kind of a jerky thing to say.
Yeah. I'm making more money to be here tonight, and I've got 4 episodes to tape after this one.
No, I think this was the time when, it was
prime time.
A special, four-night special event. Yeah. Anyway, back to Jeopardy, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Is it your favorite game show?
My favorite game show? Mm-hmm.
Do you like Jeopardy? What's your relationship with Jeopardy?
I do like Jeopardy.
Does it make you feel dumb?
No, it doesn't make me feel dumb. It was definitely mildly...
Does it make you feel like a real asshole?
It's definitely mildly ruined for me as a child, because my grandpa, whenever I'd watch it with him, he would wait until the answer was said, or the question rather. For anybody that doesn't know, the format of Jeopardy is they give you the answer and you have to say what the question is. Whenever a contestant would get the correct question, my grandfather would then say the same thing and count that as him getting that right as well, even though the question had already been correctly answered.
Why did he think that was okay? And were you playing against him competitively?
I wasn't playing against him competitively, but if I would watch it with him, it was just very annoying to watch, because somebody would be like, who is William Shakespeare? And Alex Trebek would go... that's correct. And then my grandfather would go, William Shakespeare. And it was like, well, already.
Who did he think he was fooling?
Like a 9-year-old? I don't know.
To whose benefit? Why was he saying these words out loud?
He would say that, or sometimes he wouldn't go through that trouble. He would just say, yeah, I knew that.
Well, sometimes I watch.
And then
watch
when the
Jeopardy.
Show was over, he would say, I got most, if not all of those right. That he would say.
Would he
out loud.
Go brag to your grandma and then?
No,
you
brag
to
me like a 9-year-old.
Man, seems like you had a real troubled relationship with your grandfather, Tom.
I mean, it wasn't trouble, but it was just it wasn't impressing me. I saw right through what he was doing.
Yeah, rough stuff, Tom.
So that was the beginning of my relationship with Jeopardy. I do like Jeopardy. I would say Jeopardy's probably. On a short list of TV, I don't make it a point to watch Jeopardy, but it's on a short list of TV shows. If I'm flipping through the channels and it's on, I'll stop there and watch it. It's a very watchable show. And it's also, you can tune in at any time. You don't need to know, you can catch up on the game very quickly.
Yeah, but it's fun to get to know people's characters.
Oh, of course. I mean, it's a pretty short show too. So it's not like, it's not like a 9-inning baseball game where it's only have to watch the 9th inning. It's you can. It's 22 minutes without commercials. You can watch the whole thing. It's a very fast-paced game, deceptively fast-paced.
I would say not very deceptively fast-paced. I think it's pretty overtly fast-paced, Tom.
All right. Well,
are you deceived by the pace?
No, I think
you
it's
must
just,
be a real rube, Tom. No, you must be a real hayseed.
I just think that there are a lot of game shows that have countdown timers and stuff, put pressure, and people don't think of Jeopardy as that kind of thing, because there's not that kind of overt, visible pressure. But it's like that Jeopardy moves quicker than I think probably any game show.
Yeah. When during the beginning of quarantine, they ran out of new episodes. They were in the middle of the season. So they showed the first few episodes. They showed some in syndication, some
old episodes,
memorable episodes. Yeah. And I think they showed the whole first week, and they did not play down the pacing of it at that time.
Oh, like, really?
Alex Trebek acted, the host of Jeopardy, Alex Trebek, acted like there was a countdown timer, and if they didn't get through every question on the board, like, bad things would happen. And he'd be like, architecture 200. This famous architect. Blah, blah, blah. And like,
come on,
he'd be
come
out
on,
of
come
breath.
On.
And they let people buzz in before he finished reading the question. And so it was just mayhem.
Yeah.
It was very unsettling. So I guess you're right. I guess they still get a lot in, and it's a less frantic pace. Tom?
Yeah.
My favorite show. I watch it every night.
I thought you were going to apologize to me.
Why?
Because you said I was wrong, and now I'm right, and I think I'm owed a formal apology.
No, I mean, I still think you're a rube and a hayseed, and a bit of a dimwit.
Well, that's not a very good apology at all.
I'm doing my best here, Tom. Take it or leave it. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Tom?
Yes.
What's your social battery like right now?
Beep.
Oh.
Boo.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Uh-huh.
Tom, I'll tell you from my perspective, since you're avoiding the question.
Uh-huh.
My social battery feels a little drained right now.
That was what that second sound was.
The getting
but
drained.
I had to do the going up to you, show you the going
you gotta
down.
Go up to get down.
That's what my first single's about.
It's weird. I feel kind of drained socially, even though you can attest I don't do much socially.
Yeah, and you enjoy social things, but
I do,
but
and
it drains you.
Yeah, I don't know. It can be very easy to ignore our social battery, which is kind of what I'm doing right now, and spread ourselves thin, or just not know, kind of like, you know, where the optimal socialization is for
you.
You
want to be a shut-in, but you can't be a party animal.
Yeah, what's the right amount of socializing for you, and how do you recharge? Mm-hmm. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more time alone. I don't know, maybe you need a little bit of both. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Tom, we are, as everybody knows, very pro-therapy on this podcast.
Yes.
Anybody can benefit from therapy. It's not just for people, you know, dealing with trauma.
Yeah, or going through tough times.
Yeah, it's helpful for learning positive coping skills and setting boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself, Tom. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, like you, Tom. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire, get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/complete guide today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/complete guide.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Auraframes.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Auraframe.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Auraframes are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Auraframe, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's auraframes.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Tom, it's my favorite show. Jeopardy is. Mm-hmm. I watch it every night while I eat dinner, like a geriatric.
Your favorite show, even beyond this show?
This podcast that we're doing?
Yes, this show.
Tom, I've never even listened to an episode of this
show. Even more than a Broadway show? Even more than Chicago on Broadway?
I've never seen Chicago on Broadway.
Well, that's why you're saying Jeopardy's your favorite show, because you haven't seen Chicago on Broadway.
Have you ever seen Chicago on Broadway?
No, I haven't. I aspire to one day.
I don't think they've mounted a production of Chicago in some time.
Oh, they'll be back.
They probably will.
Yeah. You watch it during what time it airs at? 6:30, 6, 7?
Jeez, Tom.
I don't watch it. I think it's at 7, right?
It's at 7 p.m.
Yeah, 7:30 is Wheel of Fortune, then prime time.
Yeah.
You ever been?
And that's when the real show starts.
You ever been in a city where that's reversed, where Wheel of Fortune's first and then Jeopardy?
Probably.
I have. It's always fuck me up.
Yeah. Well, Jeopardy. Well, I will say this, Tom.
Uh-huh.
I DVR Jeopardy.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter what time it's on.
Oh, la di da.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's the only reason I pay for live TV service.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that means a lot to the people waiting in the food pantry line that you walk past. That this is the only reason you pay to record television shows and listen to them on that big speaker you've got.
It's not even that big, Tom.
That's even worse. So you have the kind of money to afford miniaturization.
No, it's just a small speaker. I have two criticisms. Uh-huh. Oh, wait. I was going to tell you about it being paired with Wheel of Fortune.
Yes, it's sister show.
The only reason they brought it back. It was an old quiz show that Merv Griffin came out with.
That was on like during the day.
Yeah. But they're like, let's bring it back. And they developed Wheel of Fortune. And Merv Griffin was like, this show is going to be friggin' great. Let's go out there and sell it. And they're like, we can only sell things. Like, they're only selling syndication spots in, like, hour-long blocks.
Mm.
And so he's like, we just got to put some bullshit together to pair with that. So it'll be, like, the Wheel of Fortune and something else hour. And then we can sell it. So they're like, hey, remember that show Jeopardy? And he was like, I know what I'll do. I wrote the theme song to Jeopardy. So if I bring Jeopardy back, I'll get paid twice because I'll get paid... music royalties as well. So that's essentially why he brought it back, just to pair with the show that he wanted to bring back and to be able to milk the song.
I didn't know that particular thing, but I did read that when he sold Merv Griffin Enterprises to Coca-Cola, of all people, by the way, that shouldn't be allowed. That he
soda can own friggin' Jeopardy.
I found this, this is not interesting, but I found this interesting, that at the time, Coca-Cola also owned Columbia Pictures, and that's how Jeopardy became a part of Columbia Television, which was then bought by Sony and is now Sony TV, or Sony Television with all these companies. I had no idea that at one time, Coca-Cola owned a television and movie studios separate.
Don't we have antitrust laws so a soda company can't
That's not antitrust. I think if a soda company wants to buy an entertainment company, that's fine. If Coca-Cola wants to buy Pepsi, they shouldn't be allowed to do that. But if they want to buy, you know, I don't know.
I think it should be a law, stick to soda. If you're making soda, that should be your primary
focus.
Now,
you're saying just soda, though. Other industries unaffected, but...
I mean, for the most part, just soda. But, like,
what's,
I don't know.
What's
I don't think Hostess should be able to buy. I think they should stick to snack food, and they shouldn't be able to buy.
I think, like, hostesses should be able to do whatever job they want. If they don't want to be a hostess anymore, they can do something else.
Hostess Snacks, the maker of Twinkies and Devil Dogs.
Yeah, I see.
Imagine they bought the Bravo Network. All hell would break loose.
I couldn't care less. but I did read that when Merv Griffin sold his company to Coca-Cola, he kept the rights to the Jeopardy theme song, which is called Think. And over time, that made him $100 million in royalties. And he claims that that song took him 30 seconds to write, that it was based on a lullaby he wrote for his son.
Tom, remember when, who was it, Men at Work? Who did Come from a Land Down Under?
Yeah, it's Men at Work.
Had to pay all the money to the Kookaburra song people?
No, I don't remember that.
It's like... a few years ago.
I don't follow Australian law.
Anyway, I think Merv Griffin should have to pay at least $75 million of that $100 million to the little teapot from I'm a Little Teapot.
I'm a little teapot. Poor. This is my... No, I don't know. It's a different song.
No. Tip. Me over and pour me out.
Oh yeah, you're
That's
right.
That's half the fucking Jeopardy song. I know the first part's different, but, like, you know, it took him 30 seconds to write. It's a 30 second song.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is, well, I'm a little teapot.
Is the Little Teapot song a public domain song though?
Probably not in the freaking 1800s when he wrote it or whatever.
Well, what? No. Oh, when Merv Griffin wrote it.
How old is Merv Griffin?
It's like, if the Little Teapot guy wrote the Little Teapot in the 1800s, then that's fine. That's public domain. By the way, not to get into Books the Podcast talk, Tim, but The Great Gatsby is now in the public domain. Get right our own version. The Great Tomsby. And you can be my loyal servant.
Tom, do you not remember that you made that same joke on Books the Podcast last week?
Last week?
Yeah.
I'm not aware. All right.
The Great Tomsby. You said that exact same thing.
Well, look, Tim, I don't think just because people don't pay for our Patreon that they should be excluded from certain very good jokes.
Jeez, and you're going off on your grandpa for saying the answers after Alex Trebek
said it.
Look,
he didn't come up with the answers, so I came up with the jokes. I'm allowed to repeat them. Before we move on from what you were saying, though, I didn't know, and it kind of makes sense, that people who have been on Jeopardy, ineligible to be on Wheel of Fortune and vice versa.
Really? Forever?
Yeah, forever. One or the other,
Why
baby.
Why is that?
Because they're sister productions. I don't think that's like a quiz show law, but it's a Merv Griffin law, I guess. It's just like, nah.
Merv's law.
Because it doesn't really make sense, because if you're on one of those shows, you're allowed to be on it again.
No, you're not.
Wheel of
Fortune? For tournaments and stuff, you can come back on Jeopardy. But
or
if
you win, you get to come back on.
Imagine if you won on Jeopardy and they gave you the choice, like, okay, so tomorrow you could either come back to Jeopardy or try your luck at the Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, go for Wheel of Fortune. They give away so much more money on Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah. But
it's so much easier.
Do you think you would do well on Jeopardy?
No, I think I would absolutely, like, it would take... just like a very good mix of categories that I knew front to back, for me to do well on there. I'm very bad at recalling information quickly.
That's my thing, especially under any kind of pressure.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, all the categories could be right in my wheelhouse, and I still think I would have a piss poor, embarrassing showing on Jeopardy, just because, like, I cannot recall things if I need to recall them.
Yeah, especially if you're next to, you know, another contestant that is doing well and just doing the, like,
some grown up who knows things.
But who's just doing the, like, who is William Shakespeare? I'll take potent potables for 200. Like, just, yeah, you know, is like a robot that would psych me the hell out.
I would get psyched out so quickly. Yeah. That, and I'm also, like, I'm pretty good when I'm sitting eating my freaking spaghetti on the couch next to my wife, like, making educated guesses and being right. Like, eh,
yeah, but
I'm
if you
like
had to
60% sure
in.
Of this, and, like, the ones that, like, I maybe, like, halfway sure of, like, most of those I get right, because there's only so many, like, types of questions they ask, and I would be so afraid to make those educated guess type of answers, responses, because I would be afraid of looking like an idiot. And,
yeah,
like, they'd be like, this, you know, like, South American capital, and I'd be like, what is London? And then,
yeah,
you know,
like, oh,
everyone in America, it's like, what an asshole.
Well, London would be, yeah, I guess that would be. I was thinking if you were, you know, if they asked you, like, South America, and you were like, what is Madrid?
Oh, yeah, that would
and
also
be. And like,
be
like, oh, this guy thinks just because they speak the same language, but I guess London would probably go more viral just because of pure stupidity.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even think of going viral. Yeah. I don't really have a desire to be on Jeopardy. I really did. But now that Alex Trebek has passed away, it's fine. Now it's just a game show. It's not like it's like less of an institution in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, it would just feel different, I would think. It would feel like, oh, this is like pretend Jeopardy. And I think that's probably the case for most game shows when you actually get there and you see how small the set is and everything.
Yeah, you're like, ooh, is this Dollhouse Jeopardy? I thought I was coming on Real Jeopardy.
Yeah,
where's
but
the
then
one for grown-ups?
Once Alex Trebek walked out, you'd be like, oh, it's Real Jeopardy. Oh, no. And then you throw up behind the podium.
I don't think I'd be able to grip the buzzer. I think I'd be, like, shaking too much, and, like, the buzzer would fall out of my hand, and my hand would be all sweaty.
Well, that's the normally the case with the podcast, Sam. Every week, we have to edit out multiple times you drop the microphone due to how sweaty your hands are.
I'm starstruck when I see you, Tom.
The average age of the Jeopardy viewer is 65, Tim. You're bringing that number
doing
down.
Doing a lot of work. I mean, not by a lot anymore.
In 2000, though, it was 70. So Jeopardy,
oh, wow.
Jeopardy stands dying off left and right.
No, maybe a new generation is flooding the... I mean, Jeopardy is still on every day at every nursing home in America. Like,
right.
You know, there's still new old people all the time, Tom.
Yeah, but there are more old people now than ever. And the average age of the Jeopardy viewer is still going down. I do think it's probably, A, I think old people are getting dumber, and B.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're like watching QAnon videos instead of Jeopardy now. They're like,
yeah.
I'm watching Facebook tonight. Like,
right.
Yeah.
And I do think probably some younger people are tuning into Jeopardy. I mean, I know at least like you don't have cable, right? Or do you?
Did I just tell you I pay for
you told me you pay
TV
for recording things? I don't know. Maybe you got a guy next door who tapes the shows for you.
Tom, I have YouTube TV,
oh,
which
okay.
is a bad service that I don't recommend, but it has unlimited DVR, so you can keep all the Jeopardies on there as long as you want.
I was going to say, like, I've in my adult life only had cable like twice for a year each time. But I'm way more likely to watch broadcast TV because I have an antenna. And if I'm, mm-hmm. I'm rarely in the mood to just like turn on TV and like see what's out there. But if I am, I'll look at broadcast stuff. So maybe that's the case for, other young people like myself.
Tom, you're not young, though.
I'm very young compared to the average Jeopardy audience member.
That's true. That's a feather. That's a feather in your cap.
Yeah. Think about this, Tim. If you went on Jeopardy, most people watching would say, hey, look at that young whippersnapper.
Yeah. Oh, I wonder if he'd be interested in dating my granddaughter.
Right.
But then they'd see my wedding ring.
Right. And they'd say, well. I completely forgot what I was going to say. It was something awful.
You're in a roll tonight. No. I'd like to just voice my only two criticisms with the show Jeopardy.
Okay. I'll pass them along to the producers.
Number one, I think the whole premise of answering in the form of a question is dumb.
Well, that's a pretty big criticism, Tim. That's, you know, one of the tenets of the show.
I think it's unnecessary, though. Like, you, all right, so you do you know how Jeopardy was developed?
No. I'm not a freaking nerd.
It was after the you know, we're doing a show about Jeopardy. I thought maybe you might have, like, read this.
I read some other stuff.
Okay.
Well, I got more facts to
throw
at you.
I'm not saying that you need to throw more facts, but you just don't need to call me a nerd when I cite one. So Merv Griffin's wife was like, Merv Griffin was like, I need a game show idea, but like the question and answer kind of thing is kind of played out.
Yeah, it's done.
And his wife was like, why don't you do a switch? Julanne is her name. Mm-hmm. Julann. That's a weird. It's not Julianne. It's Julanne.
Yeah.
Why not do a switch and give the answers to the contestant and let them come up with the question?
This lady sounds like she's more twisted than the Joker.
Yeah. All right. Here are the two examples that she gave, and I'm going to see if you.
Okay.
Now this is why I think, answering in the form of a question is stupid, because like, the way that Jeopardy developed is not this way. All right, so here's the first answer, and you have to give the question.
Okay.
5,280.
Oh, Jeff. Oh, wow. What is 6,000 minus 800 and something? 720?
No, I don't think so. But also, you did that actually right. The question, of course, was how many feet in a mile?
Oh.
And then the other question, the other answer, see if you can get the question here.
Mm-hmm.
79 Wistful Vista.
What is the address of Frank Sinatra?
Close. What is the address of Fibber and Molly McGee?
Are those made-up characters?
Yeah, I think it was from like the 40s or 50s. But like, the thing with the 5,280, like, there could be, it's the Cliff Clavin thing. There could be a million answers that. So like, they do have to make all of the answers that there is only one correct question for them, in which case, like, the whole premise, like, then why are we keeping up this charade of we're giving you the answer? Like,
right, yeah.
They're just asking a question and you're phrasing an awkward
for
answer.
For people that aren't familiar with Jeopardy and the television show Cheers, do you want to explain and the character Cliff Clavin what the Cliff Clavin thing is? I of course know what that means, because that's what I always think about whenever I'm watching Jeopardy.
Jeopardy is so ingrained in popular culture that it appears in so many movies and TV shows.
Yes.
One of the most famous, aside from White Men Can't Jump, do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Rosie Perez was on there.
Yeah. The TV show Cheers, the character Cliff Clavin goes, and he's kind of a bar know-it-all, and he's always
spouting out trivia. Like, he's
he's never right about it. what do you want? And in Final Jeopardy, the Final Jeopardy clue was Archibald Leach, Bernard Schwartz, and Lucille LeSueur.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of thing that, like, All right. And he didn't know the answer.
Well, that's the kind of thing, like, either that is specific enough where it's like, you know that or you don't.
Right. And his response, was, who are three people who have never been in my kitchen?
Yeah, which is true.
And he argued that that was technically true. And that is technically true. And the correct answer was the real names of Cary Grant, Tony Curtis, and Joan Crawford. But in Jeopardy in real life, Tom, they wouldn't have phrased it that way. They would have been like, these three people are better known as, you know.
They would have, like, been more specific.
Exactly. And with that specificity, it just breaks the whole concept of, like, oh, this is the answer and there's only one. Like, just ask questions. Like, it's a fast-paced quiz show where they ask you questions and you answer. And I'm also afraid of that if I ever went on Jeopardy. You know how, so they have six categories in each round? And point values for each one. And so you say, like, oh, I'll take haunted horses for for 600.
Tim, that is not a category that's ever been on.
But I would be afraid that I would say, what is haunted horses for $600? You know, like, I'd be so nervous and but answering in the form of a question, Tom, that's another thing. I recently read Alex Trebek's memoir, and he points out all the things that, like, the Jeopardy theme song and the notion of answering things in the form of a question are just so pervasive in American culture, like pop culture and just like everything. Like, if you're ever taking a long amount of time to do anything at work, at a party or something, some idiots can start humming the Jeopardy theme song, which is crazy.
It is.
I'm a little teapot.
I was also trying to find, I couldn't really find the Jeopardy, the version of the Jeopardy theme song that they used for the intro that I was thinking of, that I'm most familiar with from, like, the 90s, I guess, that was, like, way more of a banger than the version they use nowadays.
It has, like, laser sounds.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's got synth in it.
It's got a build up. What's going on? What is this?
Yeah, this
now is entering the studio.
Yeah, and they introduce each person. It's like, oh, it's like what was that? That music all the kids liked with the drops.
EDM.
Yeah, no. What am I thinking of? But not a more specific EDM. Oh boy, we're
going. Why did you do this? You're making me look like old assholes.
No.
Why would you bring this up?
I'll think of it later tonight and be mad. But you know when it would build up to a drop, Skrillex. What kind of music did Skrillex do?
This sucks. This sucks. You ruined us. You've exposed us. You friggin' asshole.
Dubstep, Jesus Christ, that's what I'm thinking of. It was like dubstep waiting for the drop. Oh boy, they're gonna put us in an old person home after this show.
I mean, you deserve it.
I just looked it up. Skrillex died of old age 10 years ago.
Jesus Christ.
Tim, I looked up. We're probably almost out of time, right?
Yeah, we are. Tom, you were bragging about not knowing of always having an internal clock and knowing exactly how much time.
Well,
we had left.
I didn't want to. I know we're almost out of time, but I didn't want to make you feel bad again. But I did want to bring up a couple of more things. I'll bring up one, then we'll do the plugs. I read this Good Housekeeping dumb thing. Where it said that getting on Jeopardy was more exclusive than having a New York Times best-selling book, because they said one in 220 people will write a New York Times best-selling book in their lifetime. No, they won't. That's not true.
What is that?
That comes out to 1.5 million people in your lifetime will write a New York Times best-selling book. No. Maybe 100,000 people?
How many books are on the bestseller list?
The New York Times bestseller list? Mm-hmm. I mean, even if it's 100 books.
What if it's like 1,000 books?
It's not 1,000 books. 100 books is I mean, there are multiple categories, but you know, that actual like all bestseller fiction, bestseller nonfiction, you know, it overlaps with those other categories. But there's no way one in 220 people is not a New York Times best-selling author.
Tom, let me ask you this. You're getting mad at Good Housekeeping for printing a poorly researched fact?
Yeah. A
23-year-old intern probably wrote that.
Well, I blame the editors at Good Housekeeping, and they compare that to 0.4% acceptance rate for Jeopardy. I don't know.
Okay.
On Jeopardy, even if somebody keeps winning, what is that? 11 people a week are on Jeopardy? I mean, maybe it's comparable to the New York Times bestseller list because, like, people stay on there for a bit. I don't know.
Are you just bitter that you've never made it onto the New York Times bestseller list?
No, I'm just saying
and
that.
And you were just like, well, that's probably just a real exclusive club.
I'm just saying that one in 220 people is not correct. I know 220 people, and I don't know anybody that's written a New York Times bestseller.
That's not true.
Who do I know?
I mean, you've met... I mean, you know fewer than 220 people.
I meet a lot of people, Tim. I'm out and about, of course.
Tom, if I gave you a full week, you couldn't come back to me with a list of 220 people that you know.
I could. I definitely could.
I think around like 80, 82, you'd be like, I really thought this would be easier.
No, I could do it. I could totally do it.
Babies don't count. You can't meet a baby.
I might not be able to do it then. I know a lot of babies. If you like the show, you can find out more at tcgt.com. You can support us by checking out our sponsors. Also check out tcgt.com/Patreon for our Patreon Books of Podcasts. This week we are starting, Tim is starting to read Ray Kroc's Grinding It Out, the co-founder of McDonald's. How would you describe him?
The founder of McDonald's.
Ooh, controversial. His autobiography about how to make McDonald's.
I forgot about what a complete psychopath that man was. Reading this book.
He's a good man. He gave us all hamburgers.
He's a bad man.
Patreon.com/complete guide. You get that episode and all the past episodes. Also, check out tcgt.com/merch. We got new merch, shirts, sweaters, pillows.
Sweaters?
Sweatshirts, for sure. Hoodies and non-hoodies. Coffee mugs, you name it. We got it, unless we don't. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/complete guide. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Tom Reynolds.
Follow me at your pal, Tim. Sorry, I was browsing the internet.
Tim, I want to also bring this up. From my investigation, I could only find one instance of a couple meeting on Jeopardy and getting married. And whereas Survivor, six pairs of people met and got married.
Well, Tom, most contestants on Jeopardy only meet two other contestants.
Well, in this case, this couple, they met in the in DC at the like regional tests or whatever.
Okay.
And then they happened to be in the same group and got to know each other in the waiting room. And then they both got called, I think, or got picked for like the fourth or fifth taping. So they got to know each other.
Hmm.
And today, well, actually, this article is from 8 years ago, but they're happily married, Tim. I also want to make it clear that out of the six survivor couples, none of them include Colleen Haskell, which you might remember from Rob Schneider's The Animal, as well as Survivor.
What about her?
She was, as far as I know, the only person from Survivor that was in a Rob Schneider movie.
Tom, this is the second time in a few weeks that we've done a classic Tim topic episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't gotten to say, like, even a third of what I wanted to say.
Well, I have more interesting facts to say.
You have just been talking about nonsense. Do you even know
how long The Animal is, the movie?
I'm done.
83 minutes long, Tim. I don't know how they were able to release it that short.
This show has become a burden.
We'll see you next week.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.